Yeah, since that is my title, I wanted to mention that because she actually asked me, the litter that I used was poultry litter. And the basis for this work is that we live in a region that is adjacent to the Atlantic, and we have a bay, the Chesapeake Bay. If you saw the first presentation in this session, it was someone talking about the Delmarva watershed. And the Delmarva watershed actually drains into the Chesapeake Bay. And because of agricultural activity within the watershed, there's a lot of nutrient loading getting into the bay. And it's caused a lot of environmental problems. And the reason is that most of the nutrients are from animal wastes, and the animal wastes arise from feeds, grain and concentrates that are in many cases imported from outside the region. So that is the reason for the imbalance. So we have about two foundations. There is a lot of concerted effort to try and turn around the degradation at the bay. And some of the strategies that have been adopted is to try and limit the entry of nutrients into the environment by trying to find alternative uses for the manure, by better disposal, and also by trying to use it as raw material for other products. Also, there is an initiative, at least within the state of Virginia, to support the transportation of manure, of litter, of the facility, the confined animal facility. And there's a state subsidy that is offered for people who want to transport manure to farmland that is farther away from where the operations are. The other approach is to try and reduce importation of feed, which is essentially the importation of nutrients. And in this respect, we have a few of the businesses that consume these nutrients supporting the growing of grains and other feeds within the region. For example, Smithfield, which is the biggest producer of bacon, ham, and other products, are supporting the production of sorghum and other grains in Virginia, in North Carolina, and also in Maryland. And other similar initiatives are taking place. We also felt, now this is a personal initiative, that there is also need to look for potential forages that can be used for nutrient cycling. And these are forages that would be used to remediate the manure and then be processed upon harvesting into animal feeds, so that you create a closed loop where you're taking the nutrients off farm, feeding it to a crop that you harvest and feed it to the animals. So we designed an experiment around that idea. We are testing a nutrient recovery, that is mineral recovery, by stinging nettle, by Bermuda grass and switchgrass, and comparing that with native vegetation as controls, that is both fallow, fertilized, and unfertilized. Now, this kind of work has been done before. There is really no... The only novelty in this case is that we are working with stinging nettle, which is a wild plant. It's a nitrophile, loves nitrogen, takes up a lot of nitrogen from the soil, and it's also shown efficiency in recovering other mineral elements. And we looked at switchgrass also because it's received a lot of attention as a potential bioenergy crop. And Bermuda grass was used here because it's mostly used, it's accepted as a grass, a forage grass, a pasture grass for recovering nutrients from manures. And a lot of the manures are actually spread on fields that are planted with Bermuda grass. So in the experiment we had randomized complete block design. We had plots 8 by 12 meters, and we planted the stinging nettle. We started from seedlings, switchgrass we planted from seedlings, Bermuda grass we planted sprigs, and we install lichen, we install lysimeters, suction lysimeters in 3 out of every 4 plots, because we had 4 reps per treatment. And then we applied litter and urea to achieve a nitrogen rate of 200 kilos per hectare. And what we did was we sampled the soil, we sampled the plant material, the above ground portion, and we also took water samples from the lysimeters, and we did the analysis for minerals. In due course, as the experiment progressed, we found that that the application of litter on the plots was actually changing the species composition of the native plants that were growing there. So somewhere along the way, when we made this observation, we also started taking a census of the diversity of the plants in those plots. Now, the data I'm going to present is going to be, it is preliminary. We have data for 2 years. We are working on the third year, but I'm going to present data from the first year after establishment. And in due course, I hope to make a more comprehensive presentation from this work. So this is a pictorial representation of what the plots look like. This is actually a fallow plot that was fertilized, and right beside it is a fallow plot that was not fertilized, and you can see already the difference in vegetation. This is what Stinging Nettle looked at the end of the first season. This is the Bermuda grass, this is the switchgrass. And we, within this casing, is three suction lysimeters implanted at the depths that I mentioned previously. I have a graphic that sort of tries to represent what they look like further down as I make the presentation. So after the first year, we looked at the biomass, and we found that Bermuda grass was the highest yielder. The biomass was significant compared to all the others. And what we did was we designated an area using a quadrant, a meter square area, from which we harvested the first sample. And every time it was populated, we came and harvested again. So Bermuda grass was growing very rapidly, and that reading there is actually a cumulative unit of repeated harvests. The lowest was stinging nettle, and even though if you look at the previous slide, it looks like there's a lot of growth, it's actually very light material after you dry it. So we took that sample, we took the sample, the plant samples, and we processed it for analysis, and we did analyze. Some of the data is not here, like sulfur and nitrogen is not here, because we are still processing to see what it means, trying to do seasonal comparisons. But in terms of phosphorus, which is of interest when you're working with litter, we found that stinging nettle was quite efficient in recovering phosphorus. It was also relatively more efficient than the two grasses, at least in recovering calcium and also magnesium. In terms of the micros, we found that it was quite efficient also in recovering iron and manganese, and also to a certain degree copper and cadmium. So this is the representation that I said I would show. This is what the suction lysimeters look like. And each one of them had a ceramic cup at the end from which we recovered. We had a suction pump, a vacuum pump, and that is what we used to remove, to evacuate the tubes. And then we would have the soil water flow into the open, into the evacuated space, which we recovered and did the analysis. And based on our analysis, we found that at least after the application of the litter and the application of that supplemental nitrogen to achieve the desired level, switchgrass and fertilized fallow plots recorded the highest level of nitrate in the soil water that we measured. And that was true at all depths. It was true at the 30 centimeter level. It was true at 60. And even at 90, there was still a higher reading for the two treatments. And so what we did, even though it may not be true for switchgrass, which actually has been shown to have a root system that can grow 9 feet deep, what we did was assume that anything we found at 90 centimeters was beyond the root zone. Essentially, it represented the nitrogen that has escaped and would be a danger to the environment. It would end up in the water, the groundwater. So, like I said, the data is preliminary. I will move on to the discussion. And so part of the reason why we did this is that already we have, it's a common practice to apply the litter on land. And so we felt that if we found a forage crop that can be used to remediate the manure, it would just fit into current practices. And from our observations, the cumulative yield was highest in Bermuda grass and lowest in stinging nettle. But in terms of nutrient recovery, especially for phosphorus, which is of importance in the case of field application of litter, there was some efficiency in stinging nettle that exceeded that of the grasses. And also, when we looked at literature on Bermuda grass that has been published, we found that in fact the levels we recorded for dry matter yield were much higher than the numbers reported by Whittington in Georgia, where the variety we used was actually bred. Now this work, like I said, the idea we had was to try get a plant that we could produce based on litter and then harvest it and feed it to animals. So there was a parallel study in cooperation with a small ruminants program at the university. And some of the forage that I harvested, I pelletized and handed over to the guy who works with goats, and he designed a feeding study. And we found that the goats actually eat the stinging nettle. So we are continuing with experiments, we are continuing with work to actually develop the stinging nettle as a nutrient-dense alternative to alfalfa, because they already buy alfalfa pellets for the goats. Like I said, the nitrate levels in the soil water that we recovered were highest in switchgrass at all levels, and actually switchgrass and the fallow plots represent the greatest risk for nutrient escape into groundwater. In the case of switchgrass is actually a good, it scavenges for minerals, but the problem with switchgrass is the growth habit. It does not spread as quickly, so that even in the second and third year you still have open spaces. And what we did was we surface applied the phosphorus, or we surface applied the litter, which is the source of minerals. And the feeling is that because of the sparse growth, where you have probably more than 50% of the plot area without any plant cover, it was much easier for whatever minerals we applied to escape beyond the root zone. And so One of the observations we made is that we can only make a conclusive statement on each of the treatments of a longer period when they establish, including for stinging nettle, because the feeling is we might get better yield as the plants establish themselves, and all of them are perennial, so that we maintain the plots, even though it was a three-year study that was funded, we have maintained the plots beyond the length of the grant, and we intend to probably keep collecting data for a period of maybe 4 to 5 years. Like I said, litter application alters species composition, and that is something which we will also report. I would like to end here by thanking the funding agency that supported the work, that is the NIFA Capacity Building Program, and also staff at the lab in Belfield and also at the university. Thank you. Yeah, it's. I'm happy that you know what it can do to you. We for the first 2 years, and I have another, because the plots where we harvested the forage for the feeding study was different, and we have a flail chopper, and then we got a wagon and we didn't have to touch it. But for the 1 meter square plot, we put on thick jeans and gloves. For some strange reason, we still got stung. Yeah, it finds its way somehow. Yeah. Yes?
The plot will always let grow to maturity where they just cut at the end of the seed, just cut once.
You said?
The plots were grown to maturity and just cut once at the end of the
season? No. We cut them
multiple times.
Yes, we cut them multiple times. Like I said, let's go back to these. What we did was we flagged the area from where we did the first cutting, and then we monitored the growth, and every time we felt it had reached the same height as the surrounding growth, we harvested it again. And that was true for Bermuda grass, the first bud. For stinging nettle, we harvested twice. It's got a bimodal growth habit. It grows rapidly in the spring, vegetative. It's a reproductive phase. And by the end of May, you can actually harvest. And then it slows down during the summer, and in the fall, it grows again. It's a vegetative phase, and then we harvest it again. So we harvested twice for stinging nettle. For switchgrass, we harvested only once, because it's a warm season grass, and by the end of August it stopped growing. And for the fallow plots, we harvested about 4 times, almost monthly actually, because the species kept changing through the seasons.
So hasn't
seeding ever come back from the cutting? I would have thought it would like it very much. Yeah, it's we actually started it from seed, but as soon as you put the seedling in there, it spreads through rhizomes. And in fact, when you cut it, it produces so many growing, it's like it's stimulated by cutting, and you have so many growing points. And so every time you cut it, you have a new mass of growth. And you don't have to do anything. It comes back next year. Thank you.